Welcome to yet another edition of the Cover 2. It is J-Mac. The Realist has returned, 2 week absence. He has been bettering himself for his career and whatnot. And our boy Tim Kelly, back as always. So we're here. We'll talk football again. Georgia's 5-0, which is good, but they're not doing it in a way that looks really good. But still. We're going to try to keep this thing under 32 minutes. I just said I'd be the Larry King of the football podcast world, and I'm not really sure how that applies to this, but why the heck not?
You're going to answer a lot of calls from Toledo, people named, like, Margaret.
And I'm going to have, like, Brooke Shields on discussing her. She's going to join us later, actually. So, well, we've written a few things down because it's like the pseudo midpoint of the season, and we're just too excited. We can't wait until the midpoint of the season, so we're just going to jump on in now and pretend like it's the midpoint of the season. So we're going to go around a couple categories that we'll each talk about here. So we'll start off with the most surprising team. Who has been the most pleasant surprise this year? And we'll start with the realist, what he thinks.
I got to stick with Michigan. I think they've been the biggest surprise, especially coming off the tragedy that was last year, where they couldn't do anything right, and teams that they've normally beat up on pretty good finally got them. But this year they've come back and have gotten revenge on most of those teams, and I think the tour will continue for most of the year, and really the change in defense has just been phenomenal.
Well, that's been what they've kind of had lacking the past couple of years. They haven't been able to stop anybody, and then they thrash Notre Dame, and I think they had two defensive touchdowns in that game. So, yeah, that was – I'd go with that. It's a good call. Tim Kelly, what do you got for us?
I guess I'll just cop out and pick the obvious one and say Rutgers.
Ooh, yes.
Rutgers, you know, I thought they were going to go down to South Florida. I really thought they were going to lose, but they held on, even though they got away with a freebie there. That guy dropped the pass, I thought, just wide open in the two-point conversion at the end of the game. They could have tied it, but hey, I mean, look, they're 5-0. Are they 5-0 or 6-0? It could be 5-0. Looks like they could be going to yet another bowl, and hopefully, I like this Schiano guy, this coach. He seems he always says the right things when people are asking about the Miami job. You know, he says that he wants to win the national championship at Rutgers, which of course is ridiculous. But I still like it. I think Rutgers is going to be sad when he bolts away in a couple of years, and you know, it all came out to be lies. But
well, yeah, I was sitting at a bar next to a guy from New Jersey watching the Rutgers game, and he was incredibly excited about how good they were doing, and then somehow that bridged into a conversation about how he was convinced South Carolina was just really one game away from becoming the best team in the SEC because of Steve Spurrier. And that was when I realized his knowledge of college football ended in Trenton, New Jersey. He didn't really bring it down. So I'm going to go with the most surprising team. It's not really most surprising, but I think I'm surprised with how well Florida's played this year, because I was not a believer in the Urban Meyer offense. I'm still not completely sold on the Urban Meyer offense in the SEC. But they've beaten who they need to beat. They've already beaten Tennessee this year in a tough game, and they've beaten Alabama. They still have a brutal stretch with LSU and Auburn and then Georgia coming up, but there's a very real possibility they can go 2-1 in that stretch and win the SEC East and probably get either LSU or Auburn again in the championship game. But I didn't realize how fast they were going to be. Percy Harvin is crazy fast, so, and their freshmen are playing pretty well. So, well, look at that. 4 minutes. We've already gone through one topic. This is a record.
Yes, it is.
We'll have to slow down and talk about nonsensical things shortly.
Like the fact that there is no Miami of Ohio. There's no Miami, Ohio, like the town. It's actually in Oxford, Ohio.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Where do they get Miami from?
That's just what this book tells me.
I think it was an Indian tribe.
There you go.
Miami?
Yeah.
Then how does Miami, Florida exist?
I think it was named as a from the same Indian tribe. I don't know.
I don't have any background on this. All I have is the fact that's right. So don't ask me for anything.
I'm pretty sure it is an Indian tribe. I think their mascot's the Red Hawks or something.
It is. I think they were the Redskins and they became the Red Hawks.
Red Hawks. Yes, they are the Red Hawks.
They That's where Roethlisberger went, right?
Yeah, indeed.
They were pretty good when he was there. Miami of Ohio. Like, I'm wondering if somehow this whole Indian thing, maybe it was some forced removal back in the 1800s, and there's a connection in both places.
Could be.
We'll go with that. Okay. We'll get back to nonsensical facts from Tim Kelly shortly. The most disappointing team, and just as a clarification, we are removing Georgia from most surprising, most disappointing teams. The other categories will be able to include them and their personnel, but we just were, you know, we'll avoid bias, good or bad. So, all right, who does the realist have for the most disappointing team?
You could really go with anybody from the ACC, but I'm going to make this a career achievement award and say Dennis Franchione is by far the biggest disappointment in college football.
Yes.
Him and his $2 million contract has yielded just a .500 record over the past four seasons.
At a good school, with a good program.
Yeah, there's no real excuse for why they're so bad with all the athletes in Texas. And he is hovering around the fifth or sixth best program in Texas at, you know, probably what should be the second best program in Texas.
Yeah, he did not have the cameo on Fridays Tonight like Mac Brown had, which is, That says something right there. Yeah, I know why he left, because he had no future at Alabama, because he had such a hard, difficult time bringing players in and recruiting with all the sanctions and everything else, but it's still hard to leave Alabama. That's like one of those, with Notre Dame and Michigan and I guess Southern Cal, that's one of those jobs you just, when you get, you don't let go of it.
And what a jerky way to leave, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, he spent a whole year telling these players, don't transfer, come here. And then he made them good. They were a decent team his second year there. And he said, screw you guys, I'm going home. Where did Franchione, was he at?
TCU.
TCU, that's right.
Yeah.
A little ironic that the Horned Frogs are still prosperous over there. I'm not sure if that's irony, but Tim, who do you think is disappointing? Who has made you gnash your teeth?
Not really sad. I don't really care about them that much, but I guess they're disappointing. I will go with somebody from the ACC. I guess I'll say Miami.
Yeah.
They look just awful. Barely got by Houston, even though everyone's going nuts over this cold guy. But, I mean, come on. Anybody can, you know, just heave that ball up against these subpar teams. But I did all right against Miami, too, I guess. But, yeah, they're pretty awful, and I guess Coker's, even though he was pretty much a call away from winning two national titles, now he's on the channel. Yeah. See if there's any way that he's going to get out of this one.
No, because he's not. He might lose two or three more games this season.
Yeah, and I think also the most disappointing picture I've seen is also related to Texas A&M. Did you guys see the still shot of this cheer that I guess Texas A&M fans do, where they think they got hosed on a call? They'll stand around and like they do some elaborate thing where at the end is them grabbing their crotches. And there's this picture of all of them doing it. I guess it's not like wildly publicized. It's sort of like a secret cheer that they do. It's a great shot of like about 15 Texas A&M fans all grabbing their crotches after I guess they thought they got hosed on some call late in the game.
I haven't seen the picture, but that's, you know, the A&M fans are incredibly elaborate. The 12th man, I mean, they started the whole T-shirt thing, and that's like just the tip of the iceberg for just the insanity that is Texas A&M fandom, which doesn't really match the success. They had a good run in the 80s, but, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it'd be like, I don't know, incredibly passionate fans of Oklahoma State, maybe? I don't know. Maybe that's a bad example.
Just a step above South Carolina, I'm thinking.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Except they actually won some bowl games.
Right.
Well, so let's see. My most disappointing team, they weren't really regarded that high, but I think Michigan State, because Drew Stanton's a good quarterback. They have two really good running backs. They had a pretty decent defense. And the sheer implosion that was the Notre Dame game, and then to come back and lose to Ron Zook the following week.
The Zooker, come on.
And a quarterback named Juice.
And a quarterback named Juice.
Hey, there's no harm in that. I mean, Juice is a great name.
He cuts through the defense.
Evidently.
That was bad. I'm sorry. It was too easy, though. Yeah, I just don't understand how a team that has, I mean, decent talent could play that lousy, and how John L. Smith could be so incompetent of a football coach that the wife and I could do a better job of managing that football team. But it did lead as to, I think I forwarded around a few people, and it was on, I think it was on the house that Rock built, the Michigan State radio announcer who had the 12-minute meltdown live.
Yes. Oh, I heard that.
That was beautiful.
It was fantastic.
I want to see Jeff Dantzler swigging beam, just cussing and screaming about the ineptitude of Georgia's offense one day when they, like, lose to Vanderbilt, you know, hopefully in the far, far away future. But
at one point, it was completely it was exactly the same as a scene in Anchorman when Ron Burgundy's in the phone booth. Like, you couldn't tell the difference between the screaming. It was just like, ah, yeah! That was just ridiculous.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
He was great, though. I laughed a lot.
There really was a time where, I think had I been in this studio, I don't know if I would have been horrified and scared for my life or just on the floor in hysterics because...
Boy, the guy I was with him was like, dude, you're going to lose your voice. Please, cut to commercial.
They kept shouting, drink some tea with honey. Drink some tea with honey. It's like, I mean, sure, but I don't get it.
I think we choked on applesauce line. That should be like Boom Goes the Dynamite. We choked on applesauce.
Well, that and when he said that their defensive coordinator was the worst ever created on the planet Earth, that was pretty good, too.
Yeah,
that was pretty good.
Yeah.
So, most disappointing team for me leads to the most entertaining college football side of the whole year so far. So, until Larry Munson, you know, clubs Neil Honda Williamson with his own arm, then I think it's going to be hard.
Put a cigar out on him or something.
Honda, take this. Where did he get the nickname Honda? He runs a Honda dealership. Is that it? I thought I read that somewhere.
Isn't it Hondo?
Is it Hondo?
I think it's Honda.
I could be a moron. It's very possible that I'm a moron. I don't know.
Just listen for me.
Sure. Okay, midseason individual stuff. Who is the possible Heisman Trophy winner? Who do you have seen as the front runner right now?
I like Troy Smith. He's got the two biggest wins on the national stage, and he just seems to have all the tools right now. And if I was drafting a quarterback in the NFL, he would be my number one pick over Brady Quinn, et cetera.
You mean Juice wouldn't rank up there for you?
He's just a freshman. He's not eligible.
Oh, okay. Well, if they change rules, then
he might. I would consider Juice.
For the name value alone.
Right.
He's going to pack the seats.
Yeah.
I would say if he had a halfway competent quarterback throwing to him, Calvin Johnson would probably be my Heisman. The guy is just single-handedly practically winning games for him, and they could just throw the ball up to him every single time and probably do better than any other sort of play-calling scheme that they could possibly think of. And I'll throw out everyone's favorite stud hotshot pick now, Garrett Wolf, because everyone on ESPN tells me I should. Apparently he's going to run for like 3,000 yards this year, break every single record, and he's he's only like 5'5" and like 5 pounds.
Nothing wrong with that.
No.
I'd probably lean with Troy Smith. I was high on the Kenny Irons bandwagon, but Auburn, I still think Auburn is one of the top two teams in the country, but Smith, he's delivered in the big games, and his stats haven't been great, but he's done enough to lead him to victory, and he's doing it on a national stage, which is big. The kid from Rice from Rutgers, we talked about him earlier. I think he's only a sophomore, but I mean he's pretty good too, and he's single-handedly the reason Rutgers is 5-0 right now, or 6-0. We can't decide what that is.
Five.
Good call. So, but yeah, I'd go with Troy Smith right now. All right, and here's completely random. This can go for really team and or player. You can do both if you like. Who do you have an irrational hatred of in college football? But you really can't explain it. You just really...
An irrational hatred.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I don't have an answer yet, which is why I'm starting with you.
That is...
Well, I guess I have a rational... I guess it's conceivable it's rational, but just because I watch them a lot. I can't really even pinpoint why I hate him so much, besides the fact that we lost to him. But Tommy Tuberville, like, he just breathes this... Oh, my God, I just want that stupid smirk he has on his face constantly. Oh, I can't stand him. I can't even talk about him. And I know, I mean, even if we beat him, I would hate him. I think I even... Like, an Ole Miss, I think I even hate him. I can't stand him.
Well, I think it's a combination of the fact that he really isn't that good of a coach. He just happened to hire one of the best offensive coordinators in the country, and gee, all of a sudden, that's when they became a good football team.
And one of these stupid little, you know, trick plays going to backfire on them. Why don't they ever lose one of these games? Like this onside kick they do at South Carolina? Oh, man, it was so perfect. You know, of course he has to do that. Of course he gets it. And of course they don't give him the ball the whole time.
Do you think do you think if you and Tuberville had a best 2 of 3 arm wrestling contest, do you think you could take him down?
Yeah, but he would beat me in rock, paper, scissors.
Probably.
Yeah.
Because he's crafty.
And I suck at it.
Okay.
I always pick rock.
There you go. Play paper. Yeah, have you thought of one there for the realist?
I have to go with the entire Miami program. I've hated them for roughly 18 years now.
Wow.
And it's dulled a little bit since they've, you know, kind of fallen off the map and are in the midst of a civil war more now than ever. But I still get delight when I see them lose.
That's understandable. I've always disliked Georgia Tech, and it's because they were a rival. I'm trying to think. I really have developed a strong, strong dislike of Southern Cal and Pac-10 football as a whole in the past 2 years. And I think it's primarily because, one, Southern Cal got to be really, really good, so you kind of resent that. And, two, the rest of the Pac-10 would go 8-3 or 9-2 and be convinced because Southern Cal was good and they only lost by 30 to them, that they were good. And they would then go to the bowl games and get waxed by a 7-4 Oklahoma team and still complain that, well, we just didn't play well because we weren't in a bowl game. So I might say the entire Pac-10 headlined by Southern Cal. Because I was really, really into the Texas-Southern Cal game to the point that I remember cheering out loud and jumping up and down and screaming when Texas won. Though I would also say on a just added category about 8 seconds ago, I would say that Texas has moved up in my non-Georgia favorite teams.
I've always been a closet Texas fan myself. I've always liked their version of the burnt orange.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's a nice helmet. It's clean.
Yeah.
Penn State's been number 2 for a long time, but there is a family connection there, so that's probably why. But yeah, in the past couple of years, Texas has grown on me. I always liked James Brown, the godfather of soul and the former Texas quarterback.
Yeah, I remember that the Big 12 championship game, maybe, yeah, when he converted that fourth down against Nebraska.
Oh, yeah.
That was quite the play. I remember that. That was an upset of great magnitude.
Proportions unbeknownst to man, one would even say.
Couldn't say that.
Yeah, well,
certainly exercising the art of hyperbole there.
I'm trying. Now, Tim, we're not going to let you say Maryland because you're from Maryland, and we're not, and you already.
Well, who do I have a closet like?
Yeah, like who do you kind of like? And you know, if Georgia and let's say Maryland didn't exist, who would you say? You know what? I could hitch my wagon to that team.
I've become a big fan of Kentucky. I have a friend in law school who was a big Kentucky fan. I don't know, something about him. You know, just like, I guess I've always been attracted to like these lovable losers.
Yeah, they're definitely losers.
I like the Orioles, and yeah, they sucked. And then the only time that they were good, I went away to college in the past, like, you know. Then they won the World Series when I was 5. So they really got to experience that. And then I've always said if I wasn't an Orioles fan, I'd be a Pirates fan.
Wow.
I don't know. It's just something about it. And then Kentucky, I guess I've watched them so much in the past couple of years when I go and watch it with this guy. But I don't know. It's something about them. You know, it's just that, you know, this air of desperation around the whole place.
See, now I can sympathize with that because I've got nothing against Kentucky, but for some reason I drew immense joy when LSU scored with like that.
Oh yeah, so did I. Yeah, that was just incredible.
Primarily because the picture of Guy Morris running out convinced he won, like soaking wet from being dunked in Gatorade.
Yeah. No, the classic is the kid right behind whoever it was, at Randall, I guess, who threw it. Is it Randall? LSU, and the you see is like arms shoot up in the air as Kentucky fan. He's like in his tie and everything. And then the slow realization of what was just happening. And then this look of just utter disgust and heartbreak. It was great.
I think he like lurched his body toward the ground and like slammed his fist or something. There was somebody.
And then he vomited blood.
It was eyes fell out of his sockets. Exactly. It was great.
It was weird. And he got sucked into the bowels of hell.
Which is, that's exactly what happened. That was a great game.
It was. Good television. You can look that. You can see that on YouTube.
I'm sure you can. I'm sure you can find that. Okay. So let's see what else we have here, because we've covered our random categories. We're still doing the Cover 2 initiative, which is to get Tony Taylor's jersey retired over to Coney County. We're gonna start. We're working on getting some former coaches and/or teachers of Tony to contact the school board and to post their own little. Thoughts a la diary format for us about why Tony Taylor rocks. And he has led the team in tackles past 2 weeks and had a very good game against Ole Miss. And he's played pretty well, and that's, you know, good because we like Tony here. We have the massive tailgate scheduled for this week. We keep inviting you people to come, but I guess our 17 loyal listeners are probably
already there.
Already there, so y'all just come back and, you know, bring food, and that'll be good.
Tell your friends.
Yeah. But that Sanford Sewell, we're going to have a food critic, AJC. Folks are going to, you know, look at us, try to make good food, and make fools of ourselves for the national media. That'll be a good time. I'm looking forward to that.
That won't be hard to make fools of ourselves in front of the national media.
I think we're doing a good job right now.
Yeah. Well, I know this is national.
Oh, you underestimate the power of the Cover 2 podcast. Let's see, any other loose ends, old business that we have lying around that nothing really else going on for us? You got a random fact for us?
I was trying to
quickly... You've been scouring the book.
I was strictly quickly trying to compile the overall record of the University of Tennessee as is appropriate for our next opponent with Michael Adams' old school center.
Mm.
But it's too, they played too many times. But center really owned him at the beginning. They were, I think... Tennessee was like 0-3-2, but then they reeled off about 7 in a row, and I haven't been able to compile the final record, but if I ever finish that, I'll be sure to tell you guys.
How about give me a notable Tennessee loss from 1974?
It's got to be 74. Old Bill Battle was the head coach. 7-3-2. I think it would probably be the... The 28-6 shellacking at the hands of Alabama. Also, the tie to Vanderbilt that in the last game of the season probably hurt. See, and then they went on to win against Maryland, my Maryland, in the Liberty Bowl 7-3.
That was a riveting game.
Yeah.
Was
they didn't play Georgia. So
Johnny Majors wasn't the head coach, really? That's kind of shocking.
Close. 2 years away. Two more years, and then Johnny Majors would take over.
You gotta miss the days. That's the only set. Overtime, excellent to watch in college football, but you gotta miss the days where teams would go like 8-1-3.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was, I think Georgia in like 68 was 8-0-2, and they won some random national championship, like the Litkin House or something like that. And of course, it's recognized, and it's in the media guide. We'll have the realist look up their national championships, and we'll find out. But, and then, of course, they were 8-1-2 because Arkansas like beat them in the Cotton Bowl or something. So we'll get to that. We'll find out, or we can not look it up. I don't really care. We're having problems with the table of contents. This is a note to the sports information people at the University of Georgia, if you're listening. Why don't you put that up front for us? Because you know we're gonna like to bring those stats out. Any other random facts, or you want to move on to picks?
On to picks, I would say.
Yeah, we're doing good time here. I'm impressed.
I will say that at our most recent road trip, me and some of the people from the tailgate took last weekend to Ole Miss in Oxford. It was quite a treat. We found some interesting additions that we hope to bring to the tailgate in the near future. First off, probably a chandelier. There's a lot of those.
Really?
A lot of chandeliers. It was like your tailgate wasn't complete without a chandelier. All different types, you know. They had like, you know, the candle ones, and you know, some that had like the full like
lighting apparatus, like hanging from like a
hanging tent? From the top of the tent. Yeah.
It would seem like it'd be kind of heavy.
Well, I just got to get the right one.
Okay.
And then number two, a live animal mascot. Seemingly, this is also a big thing at Ole Miss. Number one live animal mascot at Ole Miss, a goat.
Really?
Goat. Yeah, probably. I don't know if it's this big famous goat or, but they just had a goat running around in Ole Miss paraphernalia, and people go up and pet it.
Because I think I've seen a picture of some folks petting the goat.
Yeah, I didn't get anywhere near it.
Well, it's a live animal and
it's probably rabid.
They all are. There's no way to be sure.
So I'm sure all these people are now rabid.
Yes, and that's how they are in Ole Miss.
Yeah,
I mean, full of rabies, foaming at the mouth.
But now I'm saying our own tailgaters, our own compatriots at our tailgate who petted the goat are now.
We'll have to have like our own leper colony for our rabid tailgaters.
Probably lepers too.
Different kind of rabid, though. Rabid in their own blight, minus the actual rabies infection. This is a literal rabid.
Yeah, oh yeah. Now they're rabid Georgia fans that are literally rabid.
This is true.
Yeah.
And I think we know who we're talking about. I think we're talking about Dave.
Dave, yeah. Well, he was the closest. He got really up close and personal with the goat.
Well, he does kind of like them.
Yeah.
So live animal mascot. All right, we can do that. And chandeliers.
Oh, well, also a big thing seem to be banners, pre-printed banners, either with the name of your tailgate or the name of the family that was tailgating.
We can do that.
Or pre-printed cups that had the name of the tailgate, like people who were tailgating next to. Had a thing, they were the Drurys, and their cups said Groven with the Drurys. So I guess this is all these things need to be additions to.
That's a play on grooving,
right?
Correct?
Grooving, okay. I would say.
Okay, that's we can. I think we can do that. We can. I'm not sure we can pull it off for Tennessee unless we just have a. Well, you never know. We scrounge up a few dollars. I think we're going to do good to get Sterno at the. At the Tennessee game.
Right.
Keep our food warm. Well, that's exciting. Yeah, we could. I think if we do get a live mascot, it needs to be fowl of some sort.
I was thinking an otter.
Otter would be good. I want something which you can't enjoy. You can't pet it because it's liable to attack you.
Yeah, I think otters pretty nasty.
They seem kind of mean.
Seem like they would just, you know.
Because you know someone eventually is going to try to pet it, and it's going to end really badly.
And then we all laugh.
And we would laugh at them, unless it was us, but Lord knows it's not going to be us because we're having this conversation right now. We're planning the whole thing out.
Exactly.
And again, my bet for who gets attacked by the animal, I'm going with your wife.
Yeah, that's probably a safe bet.
Okay. Well, let's move on to picks here. Though, actually, we have our championship information. What do we have here?
Actually, it was in 1968.
Man.
The Georgia team finished 8-0-2 during the regular season. And was voted number one in the Lipkenhaus poll.
Man.
Despite a 16-2 loss to Arkansas in the Sugar Bowl.
I was only off in the bowl game.
Not only that, but in 46, a perfect 10-0 Georgia team beat North Carolina 20-10 in the Sugar Bowl and still didn't get a national title because of which team?
Notre Dame.
Exactly. The dirty bastards.
See, I have long argued that 46 team. Actually, I say long argued. Maybe like
10 minutes ago.
Maybe, sure. But you look at it, because I remember reading about this before somewhere. The only reason Notre Dame was Notre Dame and Army, they tied that year because Army had like, you know, Glenn Davis and Doc Blanchard. That 46 team, Charlie Trippi finished like runner up for the Heisman, which, I mean, he was arguably one of the three best players in the country. They beat North Carolina, who had Charlie Choo Choo Justice. Another top five Heisman finalist, an unbeaten Carolina team, I believe, and then Notre Dame gets a national title, and they don't even play in a bowl game. I don't understand. I don't understand. This could be. We'll have to do some look into this. Do some research. Come better prepared, and we can make an argument next week. All right, we'll move on to our picks. We got five games on our slate this week. The first one is we'll do SEC last. So let's go the annual Red River Shootout, Oklahoma and Texas, which normally is a really good game. This one could be kind of ugly this year. So we'll go with the realist first. Who do you like?
I've got to go with the Longhorns here. They, I'm a closet Texas fan anyway. So Texas is going to win probably by a touchdown.
It's a homer pick then.
It is.
Okay.
I don't share the same rabid Texas bias, and I'm going to use rabid as much as I possibly can throughout the rest of this podcast. Now, I'm going to say Oklahoma. I think they're all still fired up, and they think that they can do some damage here and try to, you know, play off that the sympathy of getting screwed by the instant replay. Try to win out the rest of their games and see what kind of damage they can do later on. And I think they'll get by Texas in this one.
Don't they rub Red Bomar's calf for luck?
Oh, do they?
I don't know.
They rub all stolen cash, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I would say that I'm going to go with Texas in this one. I'll admit my irrational bias toward all things Longhorns, but I think they're a better team right now. If they can slow Peterson down, that's all Oklahoma really has. Texas has a good backfield, a pretty solid defense, and I think Colt McCoy will eventually grow into having the greatest Texas quarterback name in history. So... the next one, I'm not even sure why we're doing this game. Michigan State, I guess it's just a rivalry, and we enjoy the slow death that is the Michigan State football program.
Yeah, Michigan will clean John L. Smith's clock and help him out on his way.
to a slow and painful demise.
Yeah, it's sad to watch him just completely melt down. Yeah, Michigan. There's nothing else you can say about that. It's pretty much a sure bet.
I just want him to shout, we're screwing it up. The kids are playing their guts out and we're screwing it up. So yeah, Michigan, 3-4 touchdowns easy. Okay,
it's tough to win when you have the worst defense coordinator in the history of humanity.
Planet Earth, I believe.
Planet Earth, sorry.
Which, it's even bigger than humanity.
Yeah, I know. Even an otter couldn't be worse.
Our udder.
Mm-hmm.
He will know how to play a cover two. Oregon and Cal. Who do we like in this one, the realist?
I like the Ducks. I think they're about a touchdown better than Cal. The only mutual opponent that they've played thus far is Arizona State, and Oregon handled them on the road a little bit better than Cal did at home, so the Ducks will win.
I can go with that.
This is at Berkeley, I believe, so I'll go with Cal.
Ooh. Okay. I'll go with Oregon. I'll side with the realists again. I think they got a chance to. I think they might sneak up on a lot of people this year. I think they'll use the complete farce that was their victory over Oklahoma and propel that to greater things.
Just a little side note on that game. Oregon is leading the conference in rushing and is also number two in passing offense.
Really?
They're dominating the Pac-10 when it comes to offense. So.
And that's, I mean, Pac-10, one thing, this, again, as we established earlier, my irrational hatred knows no bounds. But they can play some offense out there.
They can.
Which means Oregon's pretty good. Okay, we're in the SEC. Florida begins its death march with LSU. But the Tigers have to come to Gainesville, so that might set up well for Florida. So who do we got in that one?
I think LSU is a better team. I think they actually might be the best team in the conference the way they're playing right now. They're taking care of their business, and with Florida's suspensions along the defensive front and Deshaun Lynn, you know, his injury status still unknown, at least as far as I know, mm-hmm. I think the Tigers really have the advantage.
I think I'll go with that. Sean Wynn a little banged up, and at some point, doesn't this Tebow leak thing have to get out of control? I mean, fans calling for Tebow to start over a leak, it's incredible to me, but yeah, I'll go with LSU.
My question is, what happens if Tebow, like, breaks his leg or something? Because, you know, they only have two scholarship quarterbacks.
Oh, then...
So if Tebow goes down, I mean, leak's it. Do they still run the option? I mean...
They can't, because...
Are they going to bring in the Cornelius Ingram? Or, you know, what are they going to do with Ben? I think, you know, if Tebow, if he gets hit by a safety, he may be down for the count. I know he's a big boy, but SEC safeties, they can swing the lumber.
Well, and the difference is, you know, it isn't like Tebow's doing anything else. When he comes into the game, he's running the option. He's running a quarterback draw. I mean, he's not doing anything else. That's why they bring him in the game. Yeah, and it's a shame for Chris Leak because he's having one of the best seasons in the country right now. I mean, Florida's rolling along, and he's having, I don't want to say Heisman worthy, but he's definitely one of the top five or six players in the country right now. And folks want to bench him for Tim Tebow. So
I'm all for that, by the way. I think if Florida wants to start Tim Tebow, by all means, for it.
And they should wait until they're going to go to the Jacksonville
and play Georgia. That should be his first start.
It should be. I mean, Leak shouldn't even dress out for that game.
Nah, don't bother.
Okay, well, it's settled. We'll call Meyer tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I will go with LSU in this one as well. Tigers' defense is ridiculous, and hopefully Jamarcus Russell has learned to, if the game is on the line, to not throw it either in the middle of the field or to the 5-yard line. So I just refuse to believe he could make that mistake twice.
For the love of God, don't take a sack.
Yes. Yes. Then the last game, Georgia-Tennessee, the Bulldogs have 5-0. Optimism speaking, 5-0, inexperienced team, played 3 quarterbacks in 5 games. The pessimistic side, the offensive line is not playing well. The secondary is incredibly young, minus Paul Oliver, and the receivers cannot catch anything remotely thrown their way. So, and they play Tennessee, who just thrashed Memphis.
Georgia definitely has a talent to win this game. It's not like, you know, there's a talent void on this team. There's lots of talent at every position. There's lots of speed. It's just a matter of execution, and with execution, that's something that can change. With talent, if you're deficient in talent, there's no hope. You know, you're not going to just develop talent overnight. But receivers can start catching the ball. Offensive linemen can start blowing defensive linemen off the ball, and you know the secondary is going to shut down the passing game. So Georgia has the talent to win. Whether I think it'll be this game in which everything starts clicking. Not so much. I think Tennessee is coming in, hitting on all cylinders, and look ready to really make a run at the East, which is a shock to me this season. But I think Tennessee really just has so much going for it right now that it'll be too much for Georgia to turn that corner.
Well, I know. Everything looks so bad right now. But I don't know, it just seems like several times in the past, like 5 years or so, I've thought this way. It's like, it's just everything's looking bad. I just don't think there's any way we're going to beat these, like, this juggernaut of whatever team, LSU or Tennessee or whoever it is that's coming in. And somehow, you know, we pull them out sometimes. And I'm just going to say this is one of those times. At home, you know, you just got the feeling from some of the players. I watched some of the, you know, post-game press conferences or whatever, and they kept talking about, you know, how this was such a big game. This is the big game, you know. So you get the feeling that they weren't thinking that way in the past 3 games, you know. And there's no way I think there's going to be a lack of motivation. So I guess I'll just be optimistic and say we'll win.
Yeah, I was leaning Tennessee coming into today, and I'm still thinking it's pretty much a toss-up. But I think 2 things that have kind of swayed me on it. One, Tereshinsky's going to start, and a lot of people, you know, would rather just let Stafford kind of feel his way around and fall into the role and just kind of play his way through it. And I think he's played pretty well. He hasn't gotten much help from either the line or from the receivers. But I think Tereshinsky, knowing the system, Richt knowing that he knows his limitations as a quarterback, and you look. And he played 1 drive against Carolina, led him to a score. They scored 48 points when he took most of the snaps against Western Kentucky, even though it was Western Kentucky. So I think the team feels pretty comfortable with him because they know what to expect out of him. So I think that's a positive thing. So I think the offense could perform more with him there. And again, it's a matter of time. The receivers are talented. They'll start catching the ball on the line, even though it has some depth issues. They'll do fine. And the other thing that I thought about is, I think as you were alluding to, Tim, that the team, they play to the level of their opponent. So if they're playing Ole Miss, for some reason, they don't get as fired up for it, and they kind of play down to that level. But with the exception of LSU in the championship game in 2003 and Auburn in 2004, I haven't seen Georgia just come out and be dominated from start to finish by any team. And those 2 teams, one went unbeaten, the other one won the national title. So those 2 teams were clearly the better team. So, and I think also, you know, the players have spent now 2 weeks hearing of how overrated and how bad they were, and I think that they're going to come out a bit ticked with the chip on their shoulder. And I think that as of now, it could change come Saturday morning, but I think Georgia will win in a very, very close game. So those are our picks. That's our show. What do you know? We did another one, but it's 40 minutes, but we've shaved off about 3 or 4 minutes. So for the realist and for our boy Tim Kelly, we're going to say goodbye, and we will see you crazy folks either at our tailgate or next week.